You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Making waves.
So you guys are in Detroit today. You're finishing up. You mentioned earlier before we went to recording that you guys have 6 days left. You're going to end Halloween night in Philly, which is super fitting because that is a very scary town.
It can be, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But what I noticed about this tour right now, you're out with, you've got Knocked Loose and After the Burial and Alpha Wolf with you, is you guys have been an absolute touring machine this year with the Trinity of Terror. And then I think the other one was a Dark Horizon.
Yeah.
You guys, I mean, this is like, you guys are like touring like a 1970s band. I mean, it's been nonstop, man. What's up?
Weird, because we're starting to sound like a 1970s band too. We start jamming on stage in between songs, and I'm just like, feel the bell bottoms just growing out of my pants. It's great.
But obviously, you guys are in support still of the album Scoring the End of the World, and it's been a long run on this one. But if I'm reading this right, I was kind of looking at your schedule. You guys are basically going to continue this like into 24, though, but doing kind of the European run for the album. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've been touring basically all year nonstop. We did three back-to-back tours through the summer. We did Europe in June, Dark Horizon July, August, and then we had 2 weeks between this tour start. So it's just been crazy back-to-back-to-back. And after this, we're going right into working on a record, then literally directly into starting to tour for, not particularly for that record, but kind of just retouching on touring and getting back into it next August. So there's really not going to be too much of a break with nothing going on, but I don't really do well with nothing going on anyway. So that's fine with me.
Yeah. When you're probably into your third win stage at this point.
When exactly are you guys starting to, have you, starting to record? Are you recording in Pennsylvania, Los Angeles? What's your plan?
We have to finish writing the record. I mean, we haven't really had any time to even sit down and write. Like, I've touched on a bunch of little pieces here and there, but we've not just straight up sat down with the intention of like, okay, it's record time. So that's really exciting. I'm going to take like probably 5 to 7 days off, and then it's just right into it, and we're going head first. So hoping to start recording in like April.
Amazing. That's great. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where my mind was like, how have you guys had time?
We have not at all. And I don't even bother writing on tour. It's just impossible. So
yeah. Plus your body's in a different, completely different space. Like, you know, how is that going? Like mano y mano here, when you're out there, as long as you've been, as hard as you've been, how are you holding up? What do you do? Like, where are you at right now? Like, how do you wake up? And then, like, I guess, I suppose, how do you get prepared to go to sleep and do it all again tomorrow?
You know? Man, this tour in particular has been, personally, and then it's starting to hit the band, but we've been like, I mean, thankfully we found a lot of help on this one where, you know, doing the two back to back throughout the summer, I was totally fine. I was like, felt like I was playing some of the best shows, like personally, vocally, and just energy, and felt so good. And then I think starting this tour was fine. And then I don't know what happened, but I don't know if it's just like from VIPs and coming into contact with somebody, or just general stress and wear in my body getting ready for this tour and doing this tour, but I got really sick and had to cancel a show. And then just, it just was a avalanche of like, oh my God, like what's happening? Like I was so ready for this tour and so excited. And it just ended up snowballing on me where it was like, I was barely getting through shows, but just, you know, having to rely on the crowds to sing parts. And it, we did the shows. It was great. They were awesome, but it just like, wasn't the show that I wanted to be giving, that I was so excited for this tour. And I ended up being on like tons of medications and getting through it. And then as soon as I got through it, the rest of the band got sick. So now they're all dealing with it. And it's just been like that. We very fortunately have a tour manager who is really great with, he's been getting massage therapists to come out to shows a lot. We've been doing IV therapies and all kinds of stuff that like really, really make sure that we're treating this as serious as we can and trying to stay healthy.
That's awesome. People don't think about, I mean, the tools are there now that like they weren't even just a few, even before the pandemic happened, that some of these things weren't readily available. And, you know, if anything, it's awesome to hear that people are utilizing and found the services, because I mean, your body and your mind, you know, it was a hard space that we all came out of, and now you're going full blast. Like,
yes,
I see every single one of them. So I wanted to ask you as personally how you're holding up, but also just to hear like, what is it, what's it like out there right now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
thanks for asking.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's funny, Chris, because people tend to forget that your day is not just 9 o'clock to 10:30 and then show's over. It's like starting at, you know, early afternoon, because you've got these type of interviews, you got podcasts, you've got radio interviews, you got meet and greets, you got VIP stuff, you got special acoustic things you're doing that the label signed you up for. And then you got to do the show, and then you got to fight through somewhat questionable catering from time to time. And you're right, before all these IV and massage, it was like, call the rock doc, get your B12 and get through it, instead of actually really sitting through some sort of program that you can stick to get you perfectly well, instead of just enough to get through the show. So it's super interesting to hear that you guys have taken on the IV therapy things, become big. Could have invested in that.
Huh. Yeah.
But it's funny too, this production now is your biggest to date, I would think. It's very theatrical, heavy pyro. So now you're dealing with trying to play your best shows physically, but now you're dealing with cues and where am I going to stand during that? That's got to work you over, man.
It's for sure something, like an adjustment comparatively to like, you know, past tours. But I think at least for me, there was so much time and attention put into the tour that like, I think I was very like mentally ready. And I felt like after the two summer tours, very physically ready. Like I was, again, feeling like the best I feel like I've ever felt. But then the other side of that coin is like the amount of work that went into getting this tour ready to go was probably the most stressed out I've ever been, just because it was from the second that I woke up to the second I was going to sleep, whether it be working with, you know, our LD on the lighting stuff or working with the Cherry Bombs on what we're doing for a wardrobe and changes and to getting our songs ready, like just so many aspects that I feel like go into a tour that people don't really realize, because you're seeing it all at once and you'll get to like fine pick at each step. Like, it's just been a lot, and it has been a serious undertaking, but like, it's like anything that you do in life where it's really, really hard and complicated for the greater good. When you get to that moment where you like stand back and look at it, you're just like, wow. You know, when we played the first show of this tour, just standing on that stage and looking back at everything and being like, holy fucking shit, this is real. Like all these thousands of emails and phone calls and minutes and hours of life gone into something, and then looking at it, it's indescribable.
It's awesome. You mentioned the Cherry Bombs. How did that collaboration come to be? Or, you know, did you guys just feel you needed this extra element, or what was that about?
Yeah, we've been doing like, you know, characters or dancers or people on stage. I think 2013 is the first year we did it. And then we did it again in 2017, where we had like different characters, like two women come out and do different characters and dances and interactions with the crowd. And then on the last year when we started touring, we were aware of the cherry bombs and we're like, hey, like, let's, you know, we know some of them personally. Let's see if they'd be interested in coming out and doing more strictly choreographed stuff instead of just character and interaction stuff. Mm-hmm. And then that just started that. And then this year I was like, well, let's take what we did last year and do it even bigger. So we have four of them out now with us, and it's, you know, very, very fine tuned choreography where they're doing their thing and then we interact around them or with them. And it's just such a cool element to the show that I feel like, you know, it's interesting to see that in like heavier music, but it's working. And I think it really does give a whole nother dimension for the crowd to fixate on during, you know, it's tough to watch five dudes just rock out for 18 songs, you know, like you get bored. So all these extra elements really help. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it brings a theatrical aspect to it all.
Mm-hmm. You're so good at that, man. You've always been so good at that. But I love the way that your mind thinks. I love the fact that the sacrifices that you put up with as a human to give the gift of the space of entertainment to the rest of us. And you've always you and the band. But I mean, I know how far you go back with creating props with your father. You know, I don't know how many people know how much work you actually put in to what the public is seeing in these shows. And for years and years and years, you've done that. And the fact that you're able to, like you did, how you described it is like every band dude's dream is to be like, I don't want to be five dudes on stage rocking out. And then when you get to have the chance to like boastfully do it, put these people out here and put on a show that you've always wanted to put on. I can't imagine that feeling anything else other than awesome. Hopefully I'm not wrong. Yeah. I mean, you fucking crushed. No. It's so cool to hear.
Yeah. Thank you. It's certainly really cool to be involved in the finest of the details of these things, but it's also equally as awesome to know that you're surrounded by teams of amazing, you know, people that are there to also make your dream come true. Like, you know, the pyro team, the lighting team, we have two buses packed full of people on this tour, and each one of them is so integral to the show that it's just like I love just kind of standing back and just watching everybody do their individual jobs. And it's just such a cool feeling to me to be like, wow, it all comes together to be one big thing at the end every night. And it's, you know, but the cool thing is fans recognize that about this tour, and I've seen nothing but, you know, positive stuff. So I feel like it's very well recognized, and you know, your very wonderful, nice comments definitely reinforce that. So thank you.
Of course, man. I got a quick question about if you don't mind, Justin, about the additives, if you will, in the culture of music. I mean, you guys just put out the reimagined, I guess the extended version of the record. But before that, there was, which include new songs and some different, remixes of some of the songs that are on there. But
yep,
you did something so fucking cool with Saxl Rose on that song, Werewolf. The video was dope. The performance I saw of you guys, it was dope. If you don't mind me asking for our fans, everybody I've talked to has always been, do you see that fucking, you know, so how did that all come together, man?
Well, he's been, I think he's, you know, been a fan and been around for a while. And we met him in what is it called, Sterling Heights, Maryland, or something like, I can never remember the name, but we met him in I think in Maryland or Baltimore area, and he showed us that he had done like covers of our earliest album or one of our earliest albums on saxophone. I was like, just like, what am I watching? He's so talented and such a cool guy. And I was like, well, we definitely have to have him on stage at some point. The night that we met him, I think he performed on stage with Beartooth. And we were just like, we got to make this happen. And then when, you know, years later, Werewolf comes out, and I was just like, this is the moment. Like, that song, being the weird song that it is, needs something to make it even crazier. And the guitar solo being a saxophone solo was like, godly. So yeah, I watch that video all the time, because, and it's so cool because he's like, he's such a perfect performer. He's great at what he does. Like, he's the total package, and he's definitely recognized by everyone as like that. And it's great. So I was like, we got to get him on the song and not just have it be a live thing.
Yeah, this is dope. I can ask you my next question. I think Justin had something, but I wanted
to ask away.
So then then adding on to that, here you come with you guys did this song with Illenium. Was that your track? I think it was their track that you featured on, or vice versa?
Yeah, it was a collaboration track where we he reached out to our producer Drew, and who I think he was working with, and was like, hey, let's get together and write a song. So we all got in a room and spent a couple hours writing the song, tracked it the next day, and here we are. So yeah, it's Illenium, I guess, featuring Motionless, and it's cool because we're playing it on this tour, and it's like, yeah, it's the reaction's been really great. It's definitely, it's funny because I'm joking, but I'm not joking. That's my favorite song to play every night, but it's the one that I just lose my shit to that song every night. So it's really fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. When I saw that and heard the song, so that's even cooler. It wasn't like a track that you guys reimagined with him or vice versa. It was it's a new song together as co-writers. That's fucking dope. That's even cooler. Yep. Man, it sounds awesome too. I bet you it's fun to play out
there. I think it's a little side note, maybe a little tidbit for fans to slide in there. I think we're going to try, you know, doing some stuff like that on the new record. I don't know what will make it to the record and what won't, but I definitely want to try exploring things like that on the album more, where I feel like a lot of things that we've done are very much centered around like making a new version of older things. And while I think that that's just that's a very core thing for us, I also want to try really using like that cutting edge electronic, industrial, EDM, like all that stuff, and really incorporating that in as well, and seeing like how we can combine that and make something maybe you've never heard.
The Shape of Motionless to come.
Yeah,
got it.
I can't keep up not thinking about Tim Capello in Lost Boys when I think of saxophone rock.
Yeah, right. I think that guy just did an appearance with somebody that was really big. I can't remember what it was, but yeah, that's, everyone thinks that guy.
It's just the best.
It's pushing the boundaries of the space in general is, you know, it's needed. It's it's obviously, it works, and we're in a completely different playing field nowadays where you can take risks, you know, quote unquote, and then watch them pay off. Or if they don't pay off, it's not going to crush an act like you, because you have fans that expect those risks, you know? I think that's very cool.
Well, I think people's news cycle mind too is like, they totally forget about it. If it stuck with them, great. If it didn't, they forgot about it 48 hours later. Right?
Squirrel,
that's right. Hey, Chris, since we're kind of doing this Halloween thing, what's your earliest Halloween memory? Do you remember that? And how old were you?
I don't know if I have like a specific one particular memory. I just remember my birthday and being in October. I just remember associating, you know, when you're a kid, your birthday is the happiest day of the year, birthday and Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I always remember there being Halloween decorations around for my birthday. And like, I just see my old house that I grew up in, and like, I can close my eyes and I'm just right there. I could see each decoration. I could see where everything was. I remember, you know, I've told this story a million times, every other year being alternating between being one of the Ghostbusters and one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I don't have like that one memory, but I know that I feel like I started recognizing Halloween as being like a really big thing in my life very early because of the association of my birthday being in October.
Sure. So you mentioned those two costumes. When is your birthday?
The 17th. So it was last week.
Right. Dude, happy belated. Well, you're 21. So young.
Fresh, ripe old age of 21.
It's funny. So you mentioned those two costumes. If you were to dress up tomorrow, what would you dress up as? Other than Chris from Motionless in White.
Right. I haven't, like this year, because we're playing a show, I'm going to do probably like, I like doing either the Michael Graves look every year, but
yep.
I haven't done that in a little while. I think this year we're going to go with like full blown body paint. Our makeup artist is a crazy effects airbrush artist. And yet she's out here doing like beauty makeup on us and not what her like ultra specialty is. So I think I'm just going to be like, make me an evil pumpkin thing and just go for it. So I might have like body paint that's all awesome. Over and full face of that stuff. So that's what I want to do.
That's awesome. So when you were growing up, Halloween, your birthday, do you remember the first horror film you've ever seen?
I believe Jaws. That's the first one that comes to mind. I remember that scaring the hell out of me as a kid. I'm pretty sure it was Jaws. Because like in my mind, I used to be terrified of horror movies as a younger kid. And I remember seeing that and not really thinking that a shark in my mind was associated with scary stuff. And then, you know, there it is. Oh, you're just like traumatized.
Fear of the unknown, man. It's like, you know, but it's so funny you mentioned that now, not horror movies per se, but horror and that kind of imagery stuff is now integral to your to your life. And it's kind of funny, you know, that now you're all in it.
Yeah, I think like growing up, I wasn't afraid of things like Frankenstein, skeletons and vampires and everything like that. Was never in my mind like a thing that scared me. That was just Halloween. So to me, there's still to this day is a distinction in my mind between Halloween and horror. And even though they're so interconnected and, you know, basically one and the same, they're still different in my mind. And I was very big into Halloween stuff, but jack-o'-lanterns, all that stuff. And horror took me a little bit as a kid to get like, okay, to be okay with it. I think I just had to realize like, it's not real, you know? And, that's what got me through it.
So you like the macabre stuff about Halloween. I do too, about like the leaves on the ground and skeletons, and that's the cool stuff. The gore stuff gets a little freaky.
You know, it's funny. I make that distinction between us and Ice Nine Kills all the time. I think Motionless is Halloween, macabre, you know, like vampires, Frankenstein, Universal Monster, bats, like all, you know, Halloween stuff.
Sure.
And then I see Ice Nine as like the horror side of that stuff. And maybe that's why fans love the two together or whatever it is. That's how my brain divides the two. And, it's just cool that, you know, there, you could like a wide range of that world of stuff and be involved in it, but still have it be like specific enough to whatever you like most about it.
Yeah. Isn't it funny though that the genre is blown up and that you guys were kind of one of the first out of the gates with this whole thing? I know you've got everyone from, like you mentioned, Ice Nine and even Sleep Token to a certain aspect with the masks and their kind of thing, obviously Ghost. What is it about that kind of aspect that has welded itself really into the hard rock and metal genres? Why has it gotten to be like that? Like, you know, where did all these bands come from? And is it just basically everyone had the same interest and they thought, I can apply this to music and make themes and create this thing? What is it about it?
Sure. I my guess is, of course, just because, I mean, there's an obvious aggressiveness to horror. And if I think about what music I would associate horror with, it's something more aggressive sonically. So I guess just in that sense, they make sense together in my brain. So like, if you're really into those, to those things, I can't see you going and, you know, being Ed Sheeran and writing a song about, you know, Thrasher films. It just doesn't make sense to me. So like, it just fits so well that the aggressive nature of rock, hard rock, metal works with stuff that is seen as scary, aggressive, or whatever, you know, just more visually, I don't know what I would, not a stomp, just visually, just more striking in a way that's off-putting to some people, but really, really hits home for others. I don't know.
It's funny you mentioned Ed Sheeran, because he was the inspiration behind Chucky.
That's funny. I don't know why I always use Ed Sheeran as my funny like comparison to things that are like, like if I think of the opposite of our world, my brain just always says Ed
Sheeran. But it's crazy because that guy's a freaking metalhead, which is so funny.
Yeah.
Ed Sheeran would love that. Yeah. I feel like Ed Sheeran would be like, this is exactly what I was hoping would happen with my life. Have you ever heard the band Twin Temple?
I have not, no.
It's horror themed, but it's like doo-wop-y. It's super cool. It's a girl and a guy. They might even be
that's cool.
You know, it was husband and wife. I'll send you a link to it. But you were talking about, and I'm like, oh my god! Like, and now all of the things that we traditionally place as items of horror or terror, in then we can put the aggressiveness to it, slasher films, all of that stuff. It's starting to pivot with like younger acts where like the satire of it all, of those two things being together, you know, and it's obviously a niche thing, but it's cool. Like Chelsea Wolfe, for instance, there's something haunting and terrifying about Chelsea. Yeah. That it falls into that. That's what the Twin Temple things. And I find it interesting. That would be a dope tour for Emotionless in Chelsea White tour. Like slap it in what's.
That's so cool, because like I think about, you know, what I said about like how I see like Ice Nine being the horror, us being the Tim Burton Halloween Sleepy Hollow stuff. I see Chelsea Wolfe as the Midsummer, the witch, like that Hereditary. Like each band, there's so many genres of those, or so many subgenres of horror or spooky stuff that. It's cool to see bands sound like those things. Like I see her as definitely that uncomfortable, heavy chest.
Yeah. If Chelsea was a movie, she'd be the witch.
Yes.
That movie, The Witch, kind of like super like dark and like ominous and like don't go in the woods. But the Twin Temple thing's funny because it's basically, he's mentioned this doo-wop. It's basically satanic malt shop music.
Yeah, it literally. Right. I don't know how that fits into it. Like I said, it's a niche, but immediately I was like, "This is an interesting world."
Funny,
because you are right.
They're out
wide.
They're out with Behemoth right now. So,
no, my God.
Yeah,
I guess satanic malt shop music. The closest I think I would think to that would be Ghost. So I'll have to check this band out and
see what you like them. They're a husband wife. They're kind of like the Cramps, right? They're kind of like real twangy kind of thing, but like totally like drink blood on stage and it's a ton of fun. But I mean, you take it with tongue in cheek. So with the next record, is this going to be are you guys looking to kind of change some things up or just kind of keep this kind of continuation? Or is there a way to get away from Emotionless, the sound, and create something new without getting too far off the reservation?
I mean, my initial thought going into it is that we are always reserving, you know, a few spaces on the album for things that we want to try, that we've either always wanted to, or maybe that just came to mind recently. So I say, the things we've always wanted to, like, I feel like we've really always wanted to incorporate even more electronic stuff, like the cyberpunk stuff or the EDM stuff, but we've just never really pushed in that direction too much until the recent record, and it, you know, thankfully went over really well, and that makes us feel comfortable to go even further with it now. And that's cool. I think that on the opposite side of that, something that I also really like is that you get to build up this idea of what fans do and don't like. And I now know after this last record, like, okay, we've done a few songs that sound like this and they have had this reaction, and maybe we kind of steer away from that and we try something that clear space to try something even more different. Or I don't know. I think the last record set a new type of tone for how we work. And that is that we don't work with this specific goal in mind. We just write songs. And that's what we did in the last one. Granted, we had an extra year and a half worth of time because of the pandemic. This time we don't have that luxury, but I think we're still just going to write songs and whatever feels cool. And then in the end, whatever like the deadline of like, we need to pick what songs we want for the record, then we'll see what we got and then we'll fine tune it from there. So it's just whatever happens, happens.
That's the fun. Would you say that the last record was the most fun that you made? What was the record you remember having the most fun making?
Definitely the last one, just because, you know, I'm a very big, you know, time is the key to creativity for me. I do feel like I do all right under pressure, but I just love the feeling of like, I'm going to take my time with this and really exhaust the options that I possibly hear for this song. And then I never feel like I left something behind and didn't get to explore it. And the last record being over the pandemic, it was just like endless time to explore any idea you had. And it created some really cool things like Werewolf. I feel like, I don't know if that song would have been a song if it weren't for the pandemic and that kind of time, but yeah. Getting to try 100 different things with that song to get it the way that I wanted it was like, every single band will tell you that we all wish we had more time. And that's something I even notice it with it. It's really just anything creative. I listened to a podcast that the writers from Stranger Things did, and they talked about, they feel like the last season was so amazing because they had all this time to work on it. And it, you know, it showed so much. Every episode was like, holy shit. And I could tell the amount of time that went into it. And anybody will tell you, anybody creative will tell you that time is certainly the thing that's always like, you know, you could have your paint, you could have your notes, and there's a lot of those, but time is the one thing you're always short on. I guess that's just, you know, that's life in general. So not exclusive to music.
It's funny, Chris, we talk about,
No. I was just going to say it's your first record. It feels like you never have that moment, you know, that moment of exploration where you're figuring it out, wood shopping with your buddies. Once it works, then it just is about, you know, when you catch fire, you just got to keep feeding that fire, and hopefully it doesn't burn down the whole village, you know? Yeah. But yeah, I heard that about the last record, and I wanted to ask if that was true or not. So, thanks.
Yes, very much.
You're talking about expanding the sound and leaving some room to breathe in your records. I think that's definitely the thing that we always talk about Spotify, the goods and bads. I think the good of it is that obviously it allows fans to kind of be more expansive without costing them anything to like look into new genres and go, what is Dark Wave? Who's Gunship? I want to know what this stuff is, because my favorite artist is starting to incorporate this. And it's so good as far as easing fans into that mindset. Like, it's okay for them to do this because now I fully understand what this is and how it applies to them.
Mm-hmm. That's such a cool way to, I never really thought to look at it that way, where it offers a chance for fans to explore genres without cost to them of taking the risk on a, you know, a $10 record that they don't like. Right. And then there's that pain associated with like, well, fuck, not only do I not like this, but I'm out $10. So yeah, I see the streaming world as mostly great for, not that you're asking me this, but I'm just touching on and reinforcing. Like, I do enjoy it for a lot of reasons. Certainly don't enjoy bands having their art not paid for.
Getting nicked. Yeah, of course.
But the value of it elsewhere makes up for it. Don't tell Spotify.
Yeah, it makes up because now you got new fans that can buy tickets to shows, buy merch, do exclusives, bundles, whatever it is. That's the thing. The bundles, that's where it's at for a physical product.
Yeah. Discovery. On the band side, on the artist side too, spending this time, we just talked about Saxel and Alenium, all of these things that may or may not have been a possibility without that time to explore without, throwing money in the fire. Yeah, what were you saying, Justin? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, we were just talking about the idea of using technology and allowing technology for fans to kind of, and it doesn't matter if they're okay with anything or not. You're still, as an artist, you do what you're going to do, but it allows them to kind of ease into understanding what it is this band's trying to do because they're they want to listen. What's Massive Attack? I don't know what that is. Oh, shit. Oh, I can see how they use this. It's good sometimes for the fans that kind of work that kind of mad scientist thinking, how could this apply? Like, wow, wonder if I combine Tricky with Black Sabbath, what's that going to sound like? So, yeah.
Yeah, it's cooking essentially. When you started the band, what was the year? 2004, three, two?
It just depends on. I may have talked about this before. I'm actually considering asking fans because I'm sick of wondering, and now that we're really approaching 20 years, I want to know. To make it quick, the band started its original lineup in 2004. We didn't have the name until January 1st of 2005. And then we did our first tour, I think, in the spring of 2006. So when we did our song 570, I said the 10 years was in 2006, started in 2006, because I feel like that's where we became like a legitimized band, even though we were put out EPs and stuff and we're playing shows all around like our area. I felt like touring and doing our first tour in a van was like when the band became legitimized. So that's when I felt like the anniversary or like the start was. But technically, you depending on how you look at it, it could be 2004 when the original lineup was born, 2005 when the name was created, or 2006 when we started touring. And I'm curious what everyone's answer to that would be. And either way, it's approaching 20 years.
When do you feel like, let me ask you this then. If you were to ask everybody that question, I challenge asking yourself this question. When did you feel like it was what you wanted to do? You felt like there was a future in what you were currently doing,
Mm-hmm. I guess I would say when I felt like there was like a reality to it would be somewhere in 2005, not particularly when we came up with the name, or when we named the band Motionless in White, but I think we played, 2 or 3 months after, we played a show where we opened up for Senses Fail. And that was our first actual like big show opening for a national act. And I think that was probably the moment where I was like, I'll never give up on this being a thing. And I had that mentality before we even started the original lineup, but I think that was the moment where it was like, I called and called and called and called and pestered this promoter to put us on the show without having a demo even released yet. We recorded it, but it wasn't released. And finally, he put us on and gave us 200 tickets to sell. We sold out of the tickets, selling them to all of our friends. We played the show, and it's just awesome to, he was blown away by that. And it's funny to see that guy now. And he comes up to it. Like, we saw him in Albany on the Dark Horizon tour, and he came into our VIP and was just like, hey, what's going on, guys? And it's just so wild to me to think that 20 years ago I was pestering the hell out of this guy every week to put us on a show. And it's just that was definitely a big moment where I was like, we did it. We didn't give up,
That's fucking amazing. That's full circle of shit. So was it Crocodile Rock? Was that the venue?
No. Do you know Tom Taylor from Croc Rock?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that who it was
at this point? No, it was Stan, who does more like the New York and further East Coast stuff. But it was at a place called The Staircase, which was right where I lived. And it's not there anymore, but it was for a while. And definitely a really pivotal venue for Breaking Benjamin blowing up back in the day. Like, I saw them there 100 times, and it's just, yeah, really cool venue.
That's awesome. You have a very great memory, Chris. Like, I mean, that's a pretty specific situation, you know, but
yeah.
Your memory is fucking ironclad. do you ever think about where you, if you were that, so I'm sorry to ask all these nostalgia things, but I think about, I'm wondering at that moment, could you have ever, how many things on your bucket list? Let me just ask you this. Do you feel like you've checked off a lot of like goals from that person to the person you are now?
Honestly, most of them. Yeah. We just on this tour just last week, 9 days ago, we played a show at my, I had a top 3 bucket list of venues that I've always wanted to play in my life. And we did, number 1 got checked off a couple years back. Number 2 got checked off last year. And number 3 got checked off 9 days ago. So, you know, my top 3 venues in the world I've always wanted to play are gone. All these bands I've ever wanted to tour with, most of them we've gotten to tour with. Like, I'm running out of like the top of all these lists. And I just feel, I do feel like if the band stopped today, I'd be happy because I've done essentially everything I wanted to do at this point. Now it's just doing more of it or growing the band and accomplishing like a different version of those same things. So yeah, but it's cool because even though I feel like I've hit those marks, I don't feel any less hungry or any less motivated. Like, it's just, it's like it's checkpoints along the way that keep me motivated rather than feeling lazy because I've accomplished everything.
Mario Kart.
What do you mind listing, telling us what those venues were?
The Electric Factory in Philly. I used to go there for shows a lot. And I just remember seeing my favorite band Bleeding Through play there, and they played probably one of my favorite shows I've ever seen in my life of all time. And I was like, I would die to play this venue. And just from going there a lot as a kid. So that was number 1. Number 2 was the Pavilion at Montage Mountain, which is a couple minutes from where I live, where my first show ever was. We played in 2005. We played we played on Warped Tour our very first time on the Ernie Ball Battle of the Band stage because we won the round to be able to play. So it was my first concert I ever saw was at Montage. Saw No Doubt in like 95, 96. Yeah, I'm really old, sorry. And then, you know, playing our first Warped Tour there in 2005, that was really special. And then just all the shows I've gone to there. So that was number 2. Number 3 was Hard Rock Live in Orlando. So,
oh, yeah. Wow. All right, far nice, out, dude. Yeah. You're gonna drop,
can I ask you why that one made it your list, just out of curiosity?
So yeah, they're back when I was in high school, early high school, my family would go on trips to Florida and Universal and stuff. And I remember going to my very first Halloween Horror Nights back then. Sick. It was like just a few years into them doing it. And when we went to that, it was like, I mean, it changed my life. I'm a Horror Nights fanatic. And it's always been, that is my favorite place in the whole world. The happiest you'll ever see me and the happiest I could ever be is at Universal and / Horror Nights. And knowing that there's a venue essentially in that where I can play, where a lot of my favorite bands have played in the location that is my happiest place ever, I was like, that's it. Like, I got to play there. And we finally got to headline it a couple of days ago, and it was magical.
That is awesome.
Yeah, dude.
In October during horror nights. Let's go.
Dude,
there you go.
Yeah,
in October during horror nights. They give you a free park pass for that one?
Yeah, we got to park in the back of the building. So thank you, Universal.
Yeah. There you go. Well, hey, Chad, why don't we do Walk the Plank with Chris?
Yeah, man. So I don't know if we did this last time you were on. It's pretty simple. We ask you random questions, one from each, and then we ask a random question from last week's guest. You don't know who it is until you answer it, and then we keep that cycle going. Okay. My question for you is, what villain do you secretly cheer for?
Yeah, I feel like... It's tough for me to answer the Joker, because the Joker is like the fucking like patron saint of incels, and I'm not that. So I don't like that, but I also like the psychotic and very frantic, chaotic energy of that character, and the very like, especially the anti, or the very anarchist sentiments of that character. So in some ways I support it, but others I don't enjoy the fan base. So I'm sure a lot of people are gonna be pissed off I said that, but maybe the truth hurts, pal.
yeah
it certainly does. That's a good one.
My question is this: if it, for 1 year, what animal would you like to be for 1 year?
I feel like even though I would want to be like a giraffe, because I'd want to be even taller and like just, you know, see the world from up there, I would not want to not be able to use my hands. So I feel like maybe a big ass gorilla, so I could like feel what it's like to be shredded for once in my life.
Yeah, nice silverback. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah,
just a good silverback.
Or if you want to get a good viewpoint from the world, and you still want to be strong and shredded, you could be like a bald eagle or something like that. Right?
That's true.
Big talons. Yeah,
that actually does sound a lot more intriguing as you say that, because then I can fly around and see the world from, you know, much higher than if I were a giraffe.
There and you can shit on the gorilla's silver back from the sky. And
yeah.
You're like, yo, what you gonna do about it, bro? So our last question, the question is, what sort of advice would you give to your 17-year-old self today, if you could tell them anything today?
I don't know. Damn. Yeah, I don't know. I would say, it's tough to not want to be like specific to moments where like I felt like I made just decisions that I regret or something, but I don't know. I feel like you want a more profound answer than just specific moments or anything. So I maybe to just be less trusting of people, because I feel like as a kid, I was a little very naive and feel like I just kind of wanted to always see the good in people and let some people in, that ended up being very harmful to my life or my job or some version of that. And it's, you know, it's caused some damage that I just don't feel like, or that I feel like I, you know, wish I didn't carry with me. So maybe to just be, not particularly to be less trusting, but to be more aware and self-aware, and look at the world in a little bit more of like a suspicious context, even though I wouldn't encourage anyone else to live that way. But that's what I tell myself. Yeah.
Like the world with a monocle. That's a pretty important thing to think about. When I get, when you were saying that, I was picturing my 17-year-old soul and be like, yeah, bro, it's exactly what you should do. Well, that came from AJ, who's the vocalist of the band Fire from the Gods. What would you like to ask next week's guest?
Oh, boy. Let's go. I mean, let's jump off of or relay off of something in the last question that I answered. My question would be, if you could take back one moment of your life, what would you take back?
Ooh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. We'll go erase it completely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Boy, oh boy. That's got 50 different answers.
And shades of gray.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Awesome. Well, Chris, we know you guys are in the midst of a tour and you've got six more days and you've got a show today in Detroit. So, man, we can't thank you enough for your time. You've given us an hour of it and we really appreciate it. And thanks for making this Halloween thing very special for us. We appreciate the time on that.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. So thanks for having me, guys. I always enjoy talking. So I look forward to round three whenever.
Absolutely.
I wish it was going to be there, man.
Yeah, Scoring the End of the World needs. Deluxe version's out now, right?
It is, yes.
Yeah, yes. Pick that up. Awesome.
Right on.
Physically. Get a physical copy.
Go to your brick and mortar record store and go get it.
Thanks. Good luck finding one.
All right. Right. Well, there you go. It's always hope. Anyway, Chris, thanks a lot, bud. Appreciate it. Take care.
Bye, guys. Bye. Thank you.
Nick,
see ya.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.